Good afternoon. I'd like to call to order the Property and Local Tax Division. Our first bill on the agenda today is House File 3099. Representative Falk, good afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The chair would like to move House File 399 be before the committee for possible inclusion in the division report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that many of you saw this issue before us last year, and it's a question about storage or tanks involved in biofuels, breweries, dairies, and whether or not they constitute real or personal property, and whether or not their function is involved in process or storage. And we've got a report, perhaps you've had a chance to take a look at it, from the Department of Revenue that helps clarify the situation. But ultimately, I'd like to keep my comments as brief as possible and allow testifiers to go on off of their comments. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would turn it over to, I think there's a gentleman from the Biofuels Alliance that would like to speak first.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Falk. And I'll remind members that the department did present their report on this issue a few weeks ago before the division. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tim Rudnicki. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Biofuels Association. And we're here to speak in support of Representative Falk's bill, House File 3099. And to your point, Mr. Chair, there has indeed been a very detailed study completed. It's a very thorough study, and it's a very thoughtful study, and it's limited to biofuels, wine, beer, distilled beverages, and the dairy products industry. And given the nature and the complexity of the processes, this study, again, is very focused. It identified several problems that have been persisting for about 29 years. And it finally brings this relevant section of the statutes, the tax code, if you will, into the 21st century. So it provides uniformity, consistency, and predictability for biofuels industry that is supporting about 12,000 jobs in Minnesota and can certainly grow to meet the demand for additional biofuels as required in statute. So thank you to the committee and to the Department of Revenue and Representative Falk for taking on a problem and finding a meaningful solution.
Thank you very much. Representative Falk, do you have other testifiers that you've invited to today?
Mr. Chairman, I believe this is the only one I have. There may be some other folks that wish to speak to the bill that are not
certainly
my testifiers in support of the bill.
Certainly. Well, let's start this way, though. Are there any questions for Representative Falk or his testifier at this time from committee members? Representative Keel.
Representative Falk, why would we just list certain processes rather than anything that had a processing tank?
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Keel, I think I'll let Mr. Rudnicki answer that.
Well,
sir.
Mr. Chair and Representative, essentially we have two issues here. Is it a process component or is it a storage component? And for the purposes of identifying what is considered or should be classified and under the tax classification of personal property, we're talking about process components. And the simple test, if we were to apply the language of the bill, is if you took that component out of the system, could you get your intended end product? In other words, if you took a beer well or a molecular sieve out of an ethanol production process, could you get ethanol at 200 proof that could be used for transportation fuel? And if you can answer no to that, it's a storage or real property item. And if you answer yes, in other words, if you take it out but you don't get the intended product, it's personal property. So it's a clear way to delineate real versus personal property.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm thinking of things like up in northern Minnesota, we have that canola plant. You're processing, you know, it's not the canola, it's the process afterward. Wouldn't that be considered the same as processing wine or beer or?
Mr. Rudnicki? Representative, the complexity of these industries warranted site visits and detailed analysis for each industry, dairy, biofuel, distilled beverages, and wine and beer. And I can't speak to your question about canola oil or any other processing, because each industry has its unique characteristics, and that was the intent of this detailed study from the Department of Revenue, to identify those issues and processes.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, in other words, any process that would happen in Minnesota, if it was not visited, would not be considered?
Ms. Rudnicki?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the study was defined to include those industries, biofuels, wine, beer, distilled beverages, and dairy products. And that's the scope of the study and the extent of the study.
Just to members' attention, there was an error in the stuffing of materials in your packets, and the revenue note for Representative Marquardt's bill was placed with Representative Falk's bill, and the revenue note for Representative Falk's bill was placed with Representative Marquardt's bill. So I think that was clearer. Representative Hertoff.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is really a follow-up to Representative Keel's. I want to make sure that I'm hearing the answer correctly. I thought I heard you say that if it's processing, you'll apply that same principle to other industries as well. But am I really hearing that it just applies to these four specific industries that you studied? If a chocolatier is in a warehouse and processing chocolate, is he going to be put to the same test, and will he have the same tax treatment, or because he's not in beer or biodiesel or the things you studied, is he excluded?
Representative Falk.
Mr. Chair,
Mr.
Representative, that probably falls in the purview of the Department of Revenue to address that question.
Does the department want to come forward? Remind members that the department visited a number of plants as part of the process, worked with stakeholders. I attended one large meeting of stakeholders at the Department of Revenue in working through the report, which is then this bill, I think, is closely aligns with. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the council. My name is John Klaxim. I'm with the Department of Revenue. And to your question, Representative, we were legislated to study certain industries in our report. We did that, and we identified the components as outlined in the study. It was a much more in-depth study to study every component in every industry and decide whether those are taxable or not under the recommendations of the report. It was beyond the scope of the report quite frankly, would have taken us an extended period of time.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you're saying then it is only limited to what you studied and the earlier inference of separating the difference between storage and processes is not what you're using as the criteria. So if someone else has equipment in a plant or facility that is clearly used for processing and making a product, if they weren't one of those four studied, you're saying that that is part of the real property and not personal property.
Ms. Buxton.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we did not study every industry. Therefore, the language that you see matches the recommendation in the report and is limited only to those industries in the report. If there is another industry that has processing equipment, they are not covered under this language.
Thank you. And now that's clear.
Okay. Very good. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, sir, couldn't you do a comparables? Couldn't the Department of Revenue's I'm right here. Hello. Couldn't the Department of Revenue survey across the state? You know, I don't know if you need to make it so formal, but with your criteria listed and send that out, because you basically know who's paying to your department. I don't think that's data protected, but couldn't you survey and find out if it's comparable so you wouldn't have to do these visits and then make a decision, and if it was still in question, then make the visit instead of limiting it? Because it seems to me, in listening to Representative Keel, and I have some in my area, too, that might fall in line with what she's describing, that we should have fair treatment for all.
Sir, and to Representative Erickson, the assessors will be speaking shortly on this, and they may also want to respond to your question.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we did not go beyond the scope of our study. It was an involved study, and we tried to identify those components within the industries that we were mandated to study.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Erickson.
And I appreciate that, and I thought your study was very well done. I'm just looking for comparables because we have more out there than these five. So I'll wait to hear from the assessors and ask them.
All right. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the audience wishing to testify either for or against House File 3099? Please come forward. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Welcome back to the committee. Please introduce yourself to the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dan Whitman, and I am an assessor in Martin County, Minnesota. Today I'm wearing two hats, if I could. I am representing my county of Martin County with concerns on this bill, and I'm also representing the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers with they're in agreement, that my county and the association on this, so I was going to wear a hat on both. I did testify when the report came out, so I won't reiterate that. My county commissioners have great concern with the fiscal part of this. There's a very large shift that is going to take place due to this bill in my county, and so I'll just leave it at that. Minnesota Association of Assessors does want to express concerns with this bill, and Representative Keel brought up some of the very good questions that really illustrate exactly our biggest concerns with this, where we're going to be tasked with determining processes within a structure in order to understand if a structure is taxable or not. And we just feel that that's going to be difficult. It is not equitable. One of the MAO's main premises is that we want to treat everyone equitably, everyone equally, and now we're going to have a specific set of industries that are singled out, and we're very concerned with project creep here, as this is, as I understand, there may be another industry even today suggesting that this be expanded to other industries in order to be fair. And so Martin County is a good example. I have two ethanol plants within 6 miles of each other. They're the two largest ethanol plants in the state. And across the driveway from one of the ethanol plants is a soybean crushing facility. And the ethanol plant, if this bill were passed as presented, would make the ethanol plant a significant portion of it exempt. Across the road, the bean crush plant would not have any of those exemptions. And it seems difficult to me. I did a really quick analysis thought through the tanks that we're talking about. In my county, they're roughly 1 million gallons each, these fermenter tanks. That would translate to a 50 by 50 building, 5 stories tall. That's the size of this structure that we're talking about. And if I'm going to need to know what's happening inside of that structure to know if that's taxable or if it isn't. If you're bringing in something and processing and creating widgets inside, and out comes a widget, that's going to be taxable. But if you're bringing in corn and it becomes a fuel, it's not taxable. There's something going on inside that structure in both cases, but only one of them is taxable. And that's the concern, that we don't feel like we're really that qualified to determine processes and in that industry. So that's a slippery slope that we're a little worried about being charged with, and inequity is a big problem for us. We're really based on treating everyone equally, and so when there are inequities, we have to try to explain that, and it becomes difficult. We do feel that there's a very clear definition in the law at this time. It's been determined by the tax courts. They gave us a good definition in statute. It's been through the appeals court, through the Minnesota Supreme Court. All have been upheld. We got a lot of money was spent by several counties, Polk County, Waseca County, you know, in helping to give us that really clear definition through the courts. And this bill would change all of that and overchange that, so that now we'd have a new set of criteria that we're going to have to determine what is the definition of processes. So we're going to have to start over again from our point of view. Before this came up 2 years ago, we were very near being completely equitable in the state. There were, you know, a couple of instances where we were still getting to inequity, but we were very inequitable throughout the industries. And we just feel that we do have clear definition. The report that was filed by the Department of Revenue had three options. Option one is what we're seeing today in 3099. The assessors respectfully support option three, which is status quo for the most part, you know, doing what we're doing now with clear definition and perhaps a small need to redefine the shelter test, but that would be much easier and much more equitable than changing this law.
Thank you, Mr. Whitman. Would MAAO have greater or lesser concerns if this was expanded to include other industries, as, say, Representative Erickson has suggested?
We would continue to struggle with us determining what process is and us having to determine what was going on inside of a structure. It would be more equitable the other way, but we would still struggle greatly with trying to understand what's going on inside and what is the definition of a process. Creating a widget, is that the same as creating a gallon of fuel? Is that the same as creating a gallon of bean oil? What are, you know?
All right. Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify regarding House File 3099? Please come forward, sir, to the table. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Glenn Jacobson, Assistant Renville County Attorney, was here also last year. Renville County is the starting point of many of this, dealing with the sugar beets, and I realize that is not included in the proposed bill. However, it is our opinion that the proposed amendment is not uniform, is not consistent, and the distinction and definition as proposed is not clear and is very not easily applied. The primarily used in production versus primarily used for the storage of requires a county assessor to make what could be a very scientific or technical distinction, causes them to weigh factors and determine primary versus other functions. This is ripe for court action. This is ripe for new court action that has not been discussed before, and it makes the law much more subjective as opposed to objective and easily enforced. There are examples. The Southern Minnesota Beet Sugar Cooperative has a Weibel bin valued at $9 million, so it is clearly something that the sugar beet plant would contest standing alone. The internal mechanisms in the Weibel bin are currently not taxed as they are production equipment. The outside insulated double wall shell, roof, foundation and stuff are taxed as real estate. Applying the new language would cause the assessor and the beet sugar cooperative to once again go to court to determine whether or not that bin is primarily process or primarily storage. The assessor says it's storage. The beet plant has and always has, through the Supreme Court, said that it's process. Having an exception that only applies to specific industries is compelling, as the representative noted, the county assessors to perform unequal assessment practices. They are now in a position where a law that should be applied equally and across the board is not. And they cannot, because that's the way the law would be written. The law can make a distinction in assessment and many other areas when there is a rational basis to do so. There is nothing given in this, and there was no basis in the initial request and order by the house to the DOR in preparing the study, there wasn't a reason why those businesses are separate from any other businesses, whether it's a soybean oil or a chocolate factory or anybody else. There's no rational basis for distinguishing. The reason it's limited, in my mind, and this is personal opinion, is because if it was done across the board, the fiscal note would be so huge we would not even have come close to this room. This is tax shifting at its worst. If we go across the board, the millions, if not billions, of dollars of value that are currently assessed to these businesses are now going to be shifted to the residents, the homeowners in each of the taxing districts. Right now, there are levy limits that prohibit the counties involved from making up the differences. Renville County has a $144 million road need. We get $3 million in state aid. We can't afford to have this type of a bill shifted from our businesses, from our largest business, to our residential and farm taxpayers. If this law were to pass as proposed, currently within the Janesville ethanol plant, there is an 18,000-gallon anhydrous ammonia tank. It is a commonly commercially available tank. It is used in the process. So if this were to pass, that 18,000-gallon anhydrous ammonia tank would be exempt from taxation in the Janesville ethanol plant. In Waseca County, in that exact same county, there are a significant number of these tanks owned by other businesses and farmers. They would all still have to pay tax on their 18,000-gallon anhydrous ammonia tank, but the Janesville ethanol plant would not. I return to some suggestions that I made a year ago. Exempt all tanks, vessels of less than 50,000 or some other set number of gallon capacity owned and used by in an industrial facility. Across the board, take out the potential for each consecutive or each successive court case making the tanks smaller and smaller and smaller. In the Renville County cases, we started out at 100,000 gallons. We just didn't go below that because it wasn't worth our time in the court hearings to go below that. Now, as I just said, in the Janesville, in the ethanol plant, they're down to 18,000 gallons. How much smaller is this going to go? So the legislature can and should draw a bright line beyond which the assessors just don't go. If it's used in an industrial facility, we're going to treat everything less than this, smaller than this, as personal property. Whether it's storage, whether it's process, regardless. If it's smaller than that, it's not. Across the board. A couple of other suggestions. Follow North Dakota. No tax is assessed for the first 5 years after the addition of a real property improvement. Encourage businesses, factories, people to make capital improvements to their businesses. The assessor can list it. They can put it on the roll. They date it. In 5 years, they start assessing tax on it. This is a good way to encourage businesses to make capital improvements to their businesses. The other one would be to remove all pollution control structures. Let's do something for our ecology, for our environment, by making all pollution control structures tax exempt. These are things that would aid the businesses involved and would do so across the board and would also benefit the citizens of Minnesota environmentally and economically.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jacobson. Representative Fall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do appreciate Mr. Jacobson's comments, even though we perhaps have some disagreement over this bill. One thing I would note is that I do believe he came in, well, he testified last year about this, and I think it would have been useful for, as Revenue conducted the study, to maybe have reached out to him. That's one thing he shared with me. But I'm going to, if I could read briefly from the executive summary of this report, in case folks haven't read it, I'll just give a slight reading of kind of what the issue is. Business production property can be either real property or personal property. Under current law, all real property in Minnesota, such as the land and buildings, is subject to property tax unless there's a statute that specifically exempts it. Most business personal property, such as production equipment, tools, and machinery, is exempt from property tax. The line between real and personal property can be less clear for certain industries, including biofuels, alcoholic beverage, beer, wine, and distilled beverage, and dairy processors. That is because some of the equipment used in these industries functions like real property, serving a temperature control function or offering protection from external influences. If such equipment provides shelter or protection from the elements, it is considered taxable real property under current Minnesota statutes and case law. Definitions and taxation of real property and personal property have changed numerous times over the year. Some of these changes were due to new or evolving industrial practices. Some were due to other factors. For instance, the first ethanol plant in Minnesota was established in 1988. However, state laws regarding how to tax the components used to produce ethanol were enacted 3 years earlier in 1985 and could not foresee the business needs of the ethanol facilities. That's really what the issue is here, is that some of these vessels, they're kind of caught between. They're functioning both as a temperature and protection from the elements function, but they're also integral to the process. And like other businesses, we don't tax the process components of producing a product. And this bill clarifies it for these industries.
And I, Representative Falk, you may not be aware that while your bill does not include any transition aid to assist those communities who will experience a shift in taxes from commercial industrial to residential, the division report does include transition aid for those communities.
And Mr. Chairman, for that, I am thankful, and I want to thank you.
I'll let you know after we mark up the division report.
I appreciate that.
Any other questions for the author? Seeing none. Representative Falk, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Marquardt. And again, members, you need to look in the Representative Falk bill folder for the revenue note on Representative Marquardt's bill. But we can do that. Representative Marquardt, if you would please move House File 3086
to be before
the committee.
All right. I'd like to move House File 3086.
Thank you very much. Please proceed.
Well, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to present this bill. Last year, property taxes went down statewide. And in rural Minnesota, on homes, property taxes went down $30 million. And that's even before the homestead credit refund, and went down about $11 million for businesses. So that's great news for rural Minnesota and around the state. But there was one area that did not enjoy that prosperity, and that was ag land, farmland, which went up about 11%. About $62 million. And there's a number of reasons for that, and one of the reasons being the high market value increase is about 25%. So you've got ag land going up 25% in rural Minnesota. You got residential going down about 1% in value, and businesses staying flat. So that really pushes things off. So what House File 3086 is addresses this concern, addresses the backbone of our economy, our agricultural industry, by enhancing the agricultural market value homestead credit. And so what it does is that right now the formula works that up to the first $115,000 of value, you go up 0.3% to like $345 max, right at $115,000. And then from there, currently, it will then start going down at 0.05% value. So when it hits $345,000, the credit is actually down to $230. And then any value higher than $345,000, it's at $230. So we follow the same direction up to $115,000, Mr. Chair, and then we reverse the direction. Instead of going down, we then go up by 0.1% to, and I'd like to testify to what's in the division report, which is just slightly different from what's this bill, is that it will go then up to $260,000 value, which would be a $490 credit. The bill before you takes it up to $270 or a $500 credit. So, but what's in the bill is $490, and then levels off. So basically, on a property that, you know, 160 acres, depending on what the value is going up, let's say it's $2,500 an acre, $400,000. Instead of getting $230 from the credit, they would get $490, a benefit of about $260. So if you kind of calculate on an 80 acre parcel would be probably about $1.50 an acre, 160, about $1.50 an acre, and probably about $1 an acre up from there, which might not seem huge. But when you're looking at trying to make, and I've got examples of, you know, profit loss statements from farms and so forth, that can certainly make a difference. So it applies just to agricultural homestead land, and that went up about $30 million statewide. So this would probably reduce that by about 50% on the agricultural homestead land. One other point is that there is a supplemental credit that would apply for this year, 2014. And then it would be permanent in, like it regular is, on the credit for 15 and 16 moving forward. Now, I do understand that it's going to be a little extra work in 2014 for the counties to process this and to do the calculation to get that supplemental credit out to farmers. But I, Mr. Chair and committee, last year this committee and legislature and the governor approved $40 million in county program aid to counties. And the savings in the sales tax probably was around $50 million. And in the county in which I live, they raised their levy, as did 58 other counties around the state raised their levies. And yet, homeowners' taxes are going down. Businesses' property taxes in rural Minnesota are going down, largely because of the shift onto this ag land. So the ag land increase allowed counties to increase their levies and still reduce property taxes. So I'm very confident that counties are going to find a very affordable and efficient way to help out the backbone of their economies in helping out our farmers who actually help them provide property taxes for others. So with that, that is the bill. And I'll stand for questions. I think there may be some testifiers.
Okay, first, any questions for the author from members? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Marquardt, when we sat down next to each other, I said that maybe I would be nicer with you today because we sat next to each other, but now you're not next to me, so I can. I've been catching up on the news of the day here in Minnesota, and apparently the governor has announced that the holdup to the tax relief package that we passed is that the Senate is insisting on the Senate office building passing. These are the governor's words, not mine. And I'm just wondering if this bill and the property tax division report are also contingent on the Senate getting their office building as well, or if this is a disagreement that you have with the governor.
Representative Marquardt, Chair, have you been talking with Senator Bach?
This is, I'm not even going to venture there as to what others in leadership may be thinking.
Yep, Mr. Chair.
Well, Representative Garofalo, I don't think that a new Senate office building would qualify for this credit anyways.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, that, they, Mr. Chair, they would not qualify.
There you go.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Garofalo.
Couldn't we make it ag land over there?
Yeah. It's the Representative Mahoney, it's your city.
There's certainly enough manure over there, that's for sure.
I just thought I'd throw him that salt.
Yeah,
there you go. It was right over it. I hope I hit it appropriately where you want me to do so. No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
Having a little fun. Thanks.
Yeah. As long as it's at the expense of the Senate.
Because, you know, Mr. Chairman, when the Republicans
why did
had
I
the,
egg you on?
No, because when the Republicans had the House and the Senate, we never fought with the Republican senators.
I never thought such a thing. No.
Never.
No. All right. Other members' questions? Seeing none, is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify regarding House File 3086? Good afternoon, Mr. Peterson. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union. I'll be very brief that we support the bill that Representative Marquardt's put for you and what you're working on in your division report. And as I've talked with many of you, that appreciate your consideration this for, you know, we've seen the rising land values and we recognize that. And the prices of taxes is our top priority for us, something we hear. I really hear a lot from our younger members who are trying to make a go of it, and our older farmers that are trying to make a go of it are the ones that call me almost on a daily basis looking at their property taxes. And I think that this would help, and appreciate your consideration. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not being a farmer and having to calculate these taxes, I wonder, Mr. Peterson, so if I have 80 acres up your way or wherever you're, is it 4,000, 5,000, 8,000? I mean, could you compute the tax for me, please?
Mr. Peterson, did you bring a calculator along today?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Runback, I probably am not the best person to do that off the top of my head, but I know that Representative Marquardt's done some of it, and he's furiously writing there. I can just say that, you know, we've seen the values rise, you know, in all areas. Like, you know, the area I'm in Pine County has not been as much, but in the western area, Stearns County, I just talked with a young farmer there. It's gone from $2,000 an acre 10 years ago to $6,500 an acre now, and it's very difficult. But
Representative Marquardt?
Madam Chair, I mean, you want very quickly, you could calculate 80 acres mm-hmm. times, let's say $2,500, which I know in Northwest, in kind of my neck of the woods, that's probably would be, that'd be 200,000 times, since it's in the first tier, up to 1.29 million, it'd be at 0.5 assessment rate. So that'd be $1,000 tax capacity times by 100% to 120%. So it'd be 1,000 to 1,200 bucks probably on that 80 acres, which is $12 to $15 of taxes per acre.
Representative Runback.
Mr. Chair, so what, 12? Say it then. $1,200 of taxes?
On that.
Representative Marquardt?
On the 80 acres.
Yeah. And so. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Representative Keel.
I'm going to go somewhere. I don't know if I should.
It's on tape.
Okay. Thank you. Just to explain, every piece of land that I own is taxed differently. I have land that is higher taxed because it has assessed higher value, and I have land that has it's poor quality, and so it's assessed a little differently. If I go east in my district, I don't have a lot of rocks. In fact, I have very little rocks in my land. So it is higher assessed and better quality dirt than if I go east, where it is more sandy and production is less. And so consequently, that is assessed at a lower rate. And so this is very difficult to compare apples to apples when you're talking about agricultural land. And assessors have a real challenge to decide, you know, they have criteria, but there are, I believe, is it five different, no, maybe that's the categories, five different classifications? I'm not even sure.
Mr. Hines?
Yeah. The
expert.
Exactly. Mr. Chair, Representative Keel, there really are just two classification rates for agricultural property. There's the first tier of a homestead property, which is the 0.5% that Representative Marquardt used in his example. And then for ag property over $1.5 million on a homestead or any non-homestead, it would just be at 1%. So there really are just the two class rates for ag property.
But it would be the value, correct, of the land purchased in the area. That's why it goes up and down comparatively to an area. Does that make sense? In a township or in the Red River Valley, land is valued much higher than it is to the east, and so consequently people pay more for it, so that is part of the assessment, right?
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair, Representative Keel, yes, the value could vary, you know, within a township, within any small subunit, based on the assessor's judgment of what the value of that land is, and there's no guidelines for how many different values there could be within a given area. It would just be the market value that the assessor believes is accurate, and, you know, primarily based on sales of property, if they can find good sales to judge it on.
And Mr. Hines, just to clarify, it's not the quality of the land is not the criteria that determines the taxation. It's the value of the land, which is a reflection of the quality of the land, that determines the taxation.
All right.
Others in the audience. Good afternoon, sir. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with
the testimony. Mr. Chairman, for the record, Doug Busselman. I'm the Director of Public Policy for the Minnesota Farm Bureau, and we are here to speak in support of HF 3086 and hope that you will include it in the provisions going forward.
Thank you very much. I unfortunately was off site today, and I missed my annual visit from the Noble Counties Farm Bureau. They come and visit me, and we try to look across from the consumer to the producer.
We will attempt to get them back to see you.
Okay, that'd be great. Thank you very much. Others in the audience wishing to testify regarding House File 3086? Welcome back to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Leland Shintrit, and our Reform Property Taxes in Minnesota supports this bill because we think it provides help where it's needed. Thank you.
Love the brevity. Thank you. Mr. Berenson, you saw what the chair likes, right?
I might have a couple extra words.
Okay, but he was a good model.
It was a good model. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Bo Berenson, here representing the Association of Minnesota Counties. We represent all 87 counties in the state. First, I want to thank the committee for your work this biennium on tackling the issues that have driven property tax increases over the past decade. I also want to thank the author for highlighting the increased property tax burden on agricultural property owners. County officials and staff are on the front lines of the state's property tax system, and we are extremely sensitive to the concerns of taxpayers. We do have significant concerns over House File 3086 as currently structured, specifically to the provision that would put the cost and administrative burden of notification and calculation of the state's tax credit on county taxpayers in order to get the supplemental payment out this fall. I'm joined today by Cindy Geis. She is the Scott County Auditor Treasurer. She's going to provide more of the technical background for the committee to help you understand the problems this will create for counties. I do want to, as you think about these costs that counties will assume in trying to get this credit out this fall, keep in mind that this is all occurring during a 2014 budget that's already been set and already levied for, and may require each county board to find supplemental funds within their existing budget to pay for these additional costs. I do want to acknowledge that the bill does have $40,000 in it to counties to help with these administrative costs. To help put that in some perspective, if you look at the Department of Revenue's note on this bill, they're estimating that an additional 78,000 homesteads would be eligible for this credit. So in other words, the $40,000 in the bill would essentially cover the postage to send notice to those homeowners, those homesteads, of their additional supplemental credit, to speak nothing of the additional costs counties will assume in doing all the calculation and the work to do this. With that, I do want to turn over to Ms. Geis so you can hear about the technical aspects of this bill.
Thank you. Ms. Geis, welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Cindy Geis. I'm the Scott County Auditor Treasurer. I'm also one of the legislative co-chairs for the Minnesota Association of County Auditors, Treasurers, and Finance Officers. So I'm here representing MCATPO, the acronym for that committee. And I really want to kind of dwell on a couple different components. And the main one that I want to dwell on is the timing and the ability to comply. When I was talking with some of the lobbyists and I was talking to some of the cooperatives out there that provide, or I should say the vendors that provide the software for these cooperatives, I talked to them about the technicality of the bill and how best to meet the requirements of this bill in the time frame that's set forth in it. So when I visited with them, one of the biggest challenges that we have is when we calculate taxes, our software applications are built in modules. We have the assessment module, which we just kind of heard a little bit about. We also have the rate calc module, and then we have the tax levy and credit module, and then the billing module and the receivables. In the tax calculation and credit module, we calculate taxes and credits simultaneously. We say, based upon the rates here, all of those taxes that are out there, now we're going to calculate the credits all in the same step, and we're going to come up with a net tax that's going to get put on bills that go out to the taxpayers. The problem with this bill is it's for the 2014 supplement is what I'm really alluding to here, is that we are supposed to somehow calculate a credit, not apply it, hold it somewhere in the software program, and then compare the two, send out the notice to the owner, and then send a file off to the Commissioner of Revenue so that they can pay these refunds to the property tax owner. Our issue is that we don't, that will totally disrupt the underpinnings of our existing software application, and our vendors will have to re-engineer all the software. We currently have six different vendors that provide programming to the majority of the counties in the state of Minnesota. We have three counties that have their own self-built programs that somehow they're going to have to try to get this out the door in the time frame that is required. So in the flowchart that I had created and tried to hand out, I tried to put some framework around the timing of a re-engineer of software. And this re-engineering would only take place for 2014, because back in 2015, then we would want the credit that to be calculated and put onto the tax statement. So it would be a one-time, an enormous hit to get this out, and then to have to re-engineer to get it back out in 2015. So my plea to the committee here today is that if there is a way for us to, rather than going through the mechanics of recalculating the credit, we already provide the market value by parcel file to the Department of Revenue. If there is a way that we could provide any of the additional data, whether it be just by Social Security number for each one of these farming families, and ask and provide the market value credit that we have today, because of the structure of the credit for 2015, it is a very easy calculation. So I thank you for that. I appreciate the mechanics of the 2015 credit. But if there would be a way for us to provide that information to the Department of Revenue, I'm hoping that with the mechanics of how this bill is structured and how the calculation works, that it would be fairly easy for them to calculate the difference and just send that information out to the owner themselves rather than involving the counties. And let the counties focus on the 2015 component of the bill and try to make sure that technology is provided in an efficient and fast manner so we can get proposed property taxes out. The only other thing that I wanted to touch on is some of the other things that we're really focusing on in the time frame that's going to require us to retool and try to figure out how we're going to get the staffing to be able to comply with this provision for 2014. In May, we are collecting property taxes, and in June and July, we're actually settling property taxes. It's a very intense period of time that we do a lot of proofing and validating of taxes and making sure that they're going where they need to go. In August, we're doing the primary election. And so the amount of time that we really have to focus on provisions that require us to get something else out in the summer months is going to be difficult, to say the least. So I thank you for your time, and I'm here for any questions or if I can help in any other manner to try to provide some relief to this farming community. It would be great, but if we could do it in a different fashion, I would thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Geis. Representative Runback.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Marquardt. I mean, to hear the description, we're going to great heroics to do it this way this year. Are we in an emergency situation where this has to happen in this fashion? I mean, what more do we need to know about the urgency for doing this? I mean, is it more than the election?
No. Representative Marquardt.
Well, to suggest that trying to help the backbone of our economy, our farms throughout this state, is somehow politics, I totally disagree with that and think it's a slap in the face to farmers around this state. What we're trying to do is to solve a situation that has been occurring for a number of years. And I can go back and look at the stats, and it's been the last couple of years, and I will tell you that it started when the market value homestead credit was cut. And I'll explain why that happened, is that the exclusion, the market value exclusion, dropped the tax base on homes. So just to levy the same amount pushed it onto all the other property taxes, and the data clearly shows that, because in fact, the year before, the market value was cut, the increase in the market value around the state on farms was only 4%, and taxes went up on farms about 4.5%. The next year when the market value was cut, the market value increase was still only 4%, the same as the year before, but instead of a 4.5% tax increase on ag land, it was 11.5%, almost triple. Main reason, primarily, because of the market value homestead credit elimination. And so this has been going on for a couple of years, but certainly there's been a swing back and forth. I think it's important to do that. Farm commodity prices are up and down. They're down right now. And I think if we can provide those dollars is important. And let's remember that our counties, $40 million of increased CPA, $50 million probably in increased exemption to sales taxes. And they were 59 counties raised their levies, despite all of those dollars coming in. But still, homeowners and businesses were able to cut their taxes because the farms paid the bill. We need to do something this year, Representative Runback and committee, and I think there's a way. I don't think we have to set in the cement how we do this, and I think as we move forward, there's other ways. You know, we can see. I'm certainly open to that, and I know the committee would be, but I do think it's important we try to get that out this year.
Thank you. Others? Questions? Oh, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, you mentioned there are six different providers of software and plus counties that do this on their own. Any idea what the cost might be for incorporating the plan as it's outlined in this bill into the county property tax system?
Ms. Geis.
Representative Thorkelson, Mr. Chair, members. When I checked with the cooperatives, what they thought that it would take would be about 240 to 300 hours of programming in order to get this done. They charge about $200 per hour. And there are six cooperatives, so my rough calculated would be somewhere between $324,000 to $405,000 for that alone. It doesn't take into consideration any of the county costs, but it does. Those would just be hard costs that they would be passed on to counties by vendors in order to get this out the door. So, again, our challenge, that would be to provide the 2014. They would also have to have programming changes that would put it back in place so that the 2015 credit is still calculated and applied to the tax statement. We'd have to ask them to program the credit, but not to be applied. That's probably the biggest challenge, is to calculate something that they don't know where to store it. There is no mechanism in their software to do so.
Representative Torres.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the way this bill is set up, you're going to do this process twice, once for this 2014 hurried refund, and then again for the recalculation that's going to be done as a result of the change in the formula going forward. So we're looking at $500,000 or more. I'm just figuring off the top of my head. And the bill contains how much money for counties to do this work?
Ms. Geis.
Representative Thorkelson, Mr. Chair. Yeah, the bill allows for $40,000 in some costs to the counties, and that, like was said before, that would cover the postage, but not the programming from our perspective, just to get the letters drafted, get the paper, get the envelopes, get them all set out in the administrative time. And for us, that's probably not the largest concern. I think the largest concern of the bill is the cost that the vendors are going to have, that pass along costs to the counties, and then just the timing of it. We know that there's some urgency here to get data to the owners and get data to the Department of Revenue so that they can pay these property owners prior to the November 15th deadline, which the ag taxes are due for second half. So there is a real urgency in this bill to get that done, and talking to some of the vendors, they just have a hard time being able to comply with it. And if they can't get us the software, we can't comply with the bill either, and not quite sure where we would go from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for the Department of Revenue.
Why don't They're looking at each other. Why don't you ask the question?
The question is, as I understand the bill, it requires the department to send out checks to approximately 98,000 taxpayers. Do you have any calculation as to the cost of that, issuing those checks?
Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, my name is John Hagan. I'm director of the Property Tax Division. And in answer to your question, Representative Torkelson, Representative Marquardt informs me the number is about $78,000.
No, 78,000 farms.
Oh, 7 or 8,000 farms. In answer, I don't know what the cost would be, sir.
Can you make, thank you, Mr. Chair, can you make an estimate for me? There must be some idea what it costs to print a check and send it. And I'm not asking for an exact number, just to, you know, kind of a ballpark.
Mr. Hagan?
Mr. Chair, Representative, 7 or 8,000 parcels, say 8,000 parcels, I'm guessing the cost, and there's soft costs and different kinds of costs, but with postage, I'm guessing it would be 7 or 8,000.
Right? 78,000.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Mr. Hagan, what was that?
Excellent testimony.
We keep coming up with the same number for different questions.
Yeah.
Mr. Hagan?
Mr. Chair, there's 78,000 parcels or farm properties involved, 78,000. I apologize for my hearing. Could I get back to the committee? I could certainly get a pretty, if you want just a ballpark answer,
I
could give you one, but it would have.
I would like just a ballpark.
You know, without having any data to back it up, I'm guessing, not counting all the potential soft costs, which could be exponential, would be, you know, $2 or $3 per check, I would guess.
So we're north.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry. So we're north of $200,000. Just to get an idea of what's going on here.
Mr. Hagan.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that sounds reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Marquardt, between the costs, additional costs for the counties and the additional costs for the Department of Revenue, we're eating up a rather large chunk of your refund. And I'm very appreciative of your refund. I happen to be a farmer, in case I'm sure you knew that. And I know that ag taxes have gone up dramatically and will go up again dramatically this year. But this seems to be a rather inefficient process. Can you tell me a little more about it?
Yeah. Representative Marquardt.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. Representative Torkelson, the bottom line is I would like to get relief out to farmers this year. And I don't know what those costs might be. You know, I think we've heard $200,000, you know, whatever that might be. It's $15 million of relief. And if we can get that to farmers, it's going to make a difference. And so I think we can, as we move this bill forward, look at the most efficient and affordable way to do this. I think there's ways we can do that.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just encourage members to take a look at the revenue estimate. You know, looking just in the planning window that the tax committee has to do, you know, this is $45.3 million for farmers. And, you know, I think it's unrealistic for people to think that to find a way to give it back, as we've heard people saying, you know, we need to give it all back, that you can do that without a cost. So, you know, I will tell you, members, that, you know, we all voted for a tax bill already this year that gives $500 million back to Minnesotans, and it costs money, and that's in the bill. So you have to have a mechanism if you want to do tax cuts. There has to be a way, and it has to be based on something. And I heard the testimony, and I can appreciate there's some complication in the current year. And I think if you listen to the testimony, the agreement was going forward, it works great. So the rub is, and this is true on the members who are carrying that Representative Dabney heard, increased renters' mm-hmm. credit refunds, mm-hmm. increased homestead property tax circuit breaker refund increases, and farmers. If people want to give it back, and they want to give it back now, it costs something administratively to do that. So, you know, there are, you know, I would ask members, if you want to give tax cuts to everybody, everyone should come up with alternatives. You know, I know that this committee knows that Representative Marquardt is easy to work with, so if we can get this to a conference committee, I'm certain that the chair can find a way to work through any sort of issues as it relates to administering these tax cuts. But, you know, I have to say, as a Metro member, I have heard a lot from Greater Minnesota legislators on both sides of the aisle and from the farm groups that testified that they feel caught in a combination of the exclusion as opposed to the credit and land values rising. So if people, you know, don't want to provide that tax relief, I mean, I would be a little surprised. And so if there's $1 million or $2 million cost to return $45 million to farmers, and it doesn't sound like we would even get close to that. You know, I think people have to be realistic about how you do that. You have to have the Department of Revenue involved. You have to have the assessors involved. And I can remember a time when I was here and the House wanted to give back hundreds of millions of dollars. Representative Carlson can probably remember this, in income tax cuts. And thankfully, we converted those to sales tax refunds because the cost of that was a third of the money because you lost the federal liability. So, I mean, people have to think through, if you want to give it back, and we have the whole continuum here. Some people don't want to give back a dollar, you know, in the legislature. Some people want to give it all back. But for, I'd say 90% of the legislature in both bodies wants to give something back. It's going to cost money. It's just a reality. And unless someone can think of a way other than dropping money from an airplane and letting people jump for it, I mean, you have to find a way. And I appreciate that to give the money back to people right now is complicated. And it's easier to wait till next year, but, you know, that's not what I hear from people who are renting, homeowners and farmers who are saying, you've got a surplus, give, you know, some of it back now. And that is what was in House File 1777. And this, and Representative Dabney is putting forward, you know, refunds to homeowners, renters, and farmers if this is in the division. So, you know, I just hope people can be realistic about it might inconvenience some people to return $45 million to farmers, and I think that's just a reality the committee has to accept.
Thank you, Representative Linchesky. Representative Keel?
I would like to make the point that I think we need to really work at, as you know, agriculture would be nice to have this refund or this credit increased, but I also think that we need to look at our assessors and figure out if we can do it in a simpler way for that process, because when I talked to my assessor at home, he wasn't sure if he could even meet that October 15th deadline at all with all the other things that they had to do. So but I, you know, it would be good for our district.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I'm not mistaken, I mean, the difference between what the current credit is, which is $115, and the maximum under the new program, $490. Am I right?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mark.
Representative Runbeck, the maximum right now is $345 at $115,000 value, market value.
Well, Representative Runbeck.
It does seem, Mr. Chair, that we're talking about an amount that's around $200 to $300. Why don't we just pick a number? Send everybody $300.
Representative Marquardt, any closing comments?
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the discussion. And I certainly, as Representative Linchesky said, willing to look at any way in which we can do that so it's the simplest, you know, the most affordable and that type of thing. But I do think it's important, just with our economy and the importance that agriculture has to our state, that we try to provide this relief this year. So
right.
Thank you, members.
Thank you very much, Representative Marquardt. With that, members, we will move to marking up the division report. Members were asked to hold on to their copies from yesterday. I doubt you did. In fact, I know most of you didn't. But you should find a... Representative Carlson, I apologize.
But I'm a former teacher that I found a homework assignment.
There you go. Why am I not surprised? But you should find a copy of the division report in your folder. We want to start with testimony from the public. We will not be taking testimony once we move to amendments. So
we need to stop.
We will ask members of the public then to testify at At this point, obviously, given the hour, we would appreciate clarity and brevity. So if you can limit your comments to 2 to 3 minutes, that would be appreciated. If we go past 5:45, we will recess and reconvene in room 500 North. Before we begin the division report, the chair would move the minutes from yesterday, Monday, March 17th. Mm-hmm. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Ms. Schill, would you be able to walk through the spreadsheet for members? I know there have been some slight changes.
Mr. Chair and members, I'd like to draw your attention to the updated spreadsheet. If you recall yesterday when I testified, I mentioned that the Department of Revenue was working with some preliminary estimates that made their way to the spreadsheet, and now you have an updated version since that time. It's labeled in the right-hand corner KBS 7, 3 p.m., with today's date 3/18 on it. I will just quickly tell you which lines have changes from yesterday's version of the spreadsheet. There are changes on all three pages. Line 18, there is an addition of $30,000 in the tails in fiscal 17. That's for the transition aid for the business production property tax exemption. This is the transition aid for that. There are property tax, income tax interactions, and that's what that $30,000 is. Moving to line 33 on page 1, the agricultural market value credit. Actually, this was recalculated once again in the tails fiscal 16 and 17, and each of those numbers, the $14.8 million, the $15.1 million, is about $600,000 less than what yesterday's sheet had. Moving to line 38 under property tax changes, Mr. Chair, your bill, House File 1884, does have interactions with it, but it is a cost savings because these are property tax related. So it's $20,000 in fiscal 16 and 17. On page 2, the change, we just added line 54 is new. This is Representative Bach's bill, and this is a definition that has no cost. Line 60 is simply to harmonize what Mr. Michael mentioned in the sheet yesterday with respect to general provisions impacting tax increment financing. On page 3, line 92, line 97, and line 100 have all changed because the production tax rate growth that we have in the division report is slightly different than Representative Metz's bill. And so there were adjustments, once again, made in the tails. Cost savings is a little higher than what yesterday's sheet had. So the cost savings in line 92 is just under $2.5 million in the first year, $3.4 million in the second year, and then there are associated changes in lines 97 and 100. And that's the update, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. At this time, the chair would like to move House File 1884 to be before the committee, and I'd like to move the A14-0890 amendment to get the bill initially in the form that I would like as author. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The chair would now like to move the H1884A5 amendment, but I would like to ask Mr. Hines, if you would please walk through the A5 author's amendment. It is at the front end the bill that we heard on an informational basis yesterday regarding solar energy production tax, but later it does go to some technical changes in the division report. Mr. Hines.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, as you alluded to, of the amendment, the first two full pages and up through line 14 of page 3 are all related to your House File 2911, the solar energy production tax bill that we heard yesterday, with some changes after some negotiations between the advocates and the Department of Revenue and myself. We made a few changes to that, but substantively it's the same, I think, as it was. Then on page, then starting with lines 3.15 of the amendment, the first three lines there are all related to...
Mr. Hines, let me... Does everyone have a copy of this amendment? I'm seeing enough... Sorry, Mr. Hines. Does everyone have a copy of the 1884A5 amendment? Okay. My apologies, Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair, then on page, the lines 3.15, 3.16, 3.17 of the amendment, these are very technical matters related to some cleanup of some changes we are making in the old statutes. Really the same also with lines 3.18. 3.19 through 3.21 are some changes that the Department of Revenue pointed out that we had missed in their technical bill that we needed to pick up. Lines 3.22 and 23 are recommendations that came from the Minerals Department of the Department of Revenue relating to the Representative Metz's bill. Lines 3.24 and 3.25 are the amendment to Representative Runbeck's bill that was incorporated from yesterday, and that's the last two are boilerplate.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. And to those on the solar production tax provision, the significant changes is there's now language beyond what I'd referenced yesterday, which is the drop from 60% as the capacity factor to 30%. There's language to clarify how to determine the size of a solar energy generating system. We don't want a solar developer to build a 2-megawatt project, for instance, but split it into 2 1-megawatt projects to avoid the production tax. The language in the amendment eliminates that possibility. And secondly, there's language included to clarify that the construction of a solar energy generating system does not change the taxable value of the land or buildings. The real property on which it is constructed, the real property will remain classified based on the most probable use to the property as it has been improved with the solar energy system. And this works for large and small size systems. With that, discussion to the A5 amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Then, to the division report, public testimony as amended. Mr. Whitman, my apologies. If you could hold for just a moment. Members, staff has just notified me of an additional author's amendment, a change in date. I will do it as a oral amendment. Page 44, lines 10 and 11, delete 2014 and insert 2015. Obviously, those are years. And this has to do with Border Cities aid. Representative Lean's bill that we heard yesterday. So again, page 44, lines 10 and 11, delete the year 2014 and insert 2015. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Mr. Whitman, welcome back to the committee and to the division report as amended, please, sir.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, I'm Dan Whitman. I'm Martin County Assessor. I'm here today representing Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers, and it's a lot more fun. And the assessor, I'm here today representing Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers, and it's a lot more fun and easy to speak in support of things than it is against. So happy to say we are pretty supportive of the majority of your division report. Just to highlight a couple things in our position statement, bullet one talks about uniformity and quality of assessments. It's very important to us. Our second bullet talks about fair and equitable tax bases and understandable and transparent to taxpayers. And our bullet three talks about ease for the taxpayers to understand. And many of the cases, I won't go through everyone for the sake of brevity, but many of the things we're seeing here, we've noticed that you've attempted to do that, and we appreciate it very much in not changing values but using credits. And and in making things more equitable and more easy to understand, and in fair bill equity. So those, I wanted to make that comment to a whole number of parts of this report that you're working on. There's just one exception, and that was the veterans exclusion. We very carefully speak as against that, in that is treating a very small, relatively small number of taxpayers. We really like to treat everyone equally, and so that would be the only comment we would make there. This is extending a little farther a tax exclusion of value to a small number, and so that would be our only comment on that. Other than that, we are generally in support. Of course, Article 2 I spoke about just a few moments ago, and I won't go into all that again because we've already talked that. We do have some serious concerns about Article 2 in the production tax. But other than that, thank you and appreciate that.
Thank you very much. Others in the audience wishing to testify regarding House File 1844 as amended? Mr. Avin, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Haven. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Center for Fiscal Excellence. Just a couple of very brief comments. First of all, I want to thank the committee for pursuing class rate cleanup. Certainly, there's a lot of work to do there, but it's a good start, and we appreciate your attention to that important dimension of our property tax system. The two concerns that we have in the bill are, first of all, the indexing of LGA to inflation. For the primary reason, we believe this creates a false sense of predictability in aid distribution. Local governments will establish cost structures, will enter into labor contract agreements based on this expectation of aid. And when the next recession comes, of course, aids will be frozen or cut, as they always have been, but those cost structures will remain. We're concerned that this is a promise that simply this body can't keep, and therefore a much better way to approach this issue is to change the appropriation every year if necessary. And we would also express concern with the exempting of the first tier of the CI property value from the statewide business tax. We appreciate certainly the intent of that. However, we believe it's an indiscriminate shifting of commercial property tax burdens, and it increases property taxes on many of the businesses that were intended to be helped by this effort. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Others in the audience? Mr. Carlson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. I would like to testify in support of Article 1, Section 3, and Section 4. Section 3 is the cleanup language to reflect the intent of last year's legislature in the LGA formula. Representative Lean had the bill to clarify what we intended last year. It was an oversight in the drafting of the bill. And then also like to testify in support of Section 4 of Article 1. That is the adjustment, the growth adjustment for LGA. That was originally part of the proposal offered to the legislature last year and part of Representative Lean's bill as well, and that fell away in conference committee, but we do support that appropriation increase. I don't agree with Mr. Haveman's comments about building expectations on that number. Keep in mind the formula for LGA is a dynamic formula that will adjust the distribution to each city, and I don't think that it's going to result in labor contract negotiations that are going to be long-term commitments of cities just simply because of an adjustment to the appropriation. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would stand for any questions.
Right. Thank you very much, Ms. Crossan. Anyone else in the audience wishing to testify? Mr. Berenson. Welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. Bo Berenson from the Association of Minnesota Counties. Just very briefly, I did share the news of the division's choice to include the supplemental county program aid appropriation with the 11 counties impacted. They were extremely grateful and sent their thanks to the committee, and I'm sharing that with you right now.
Thank you very much. Anyone else in the audience wishing to testify? Quick, yes, seeing no one else. We will close public testimony. Are there any amendments? Seeing none.
Quick.
Yeah. Quick. The chair will move House File 1844 as amended to be passed and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Any discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Motion prevails. I want to thank the staff, particularly Ms. Thompson and Ms. Locke, and the, Nick, where are you? The page, he's here somewhere. There he is. Thank you very much, as well, of course, as I did yesterday, thank nonpartisan staff, as well as GOP and DFL caucus staff for their support this year, and thank members. I do not anticipate at this time any more hearings, although if there are reasons to do informational hearings, Ms. Locke will send out notice. With that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. We stand adjourned.